This evening we are in session number 10, and we are looking at the three kings, Elah, Zimri, and Omri. Now, when you say the three kings, it's V with a double E, meaning small. Why do we call them as V three kings or small three kings? Because the reigns of these three kings covered 14 years, and out of that, Omri reigned for 12 years. So three kings put together, 14 years, just Omri alone, 12 years. So two kings in 2 years' time. Now, that is why they had short reigns. You know, why did they have short reigns? Were their reigns good? Could they accomplish much in those short reigns? Now, we must remember that life is not in our hands, it's in the hand of God. And the life that God gives to us, whether it is long or short, our job is to make sure that we do that which pleases God. And here, if you notice, God ordained these kings, and when they did not do that which God required them to do, the Lord took their life away as well. So we notice, when we are looking at the northern kingdom, it seems to be a downhill, you know, and this evening we are going to look at these three kings. One guy who got so drunk, you know, and as a result the next guy killed him by treachery, you know, and after doing that, you know, he himself committed suicide because the next guy after him took over. So it's a crazy, you know, 14 years that we are going to cover this evening. So 1 Kings chapter 16 verses 8 to 28 recounts the story of these three kings together. They had around 14 years, 12 of them belonging to Omri. Now, the Bible doesn't say much about those 12 years of Omri, but extra-biblical sources, Assyrian and materials, do mention that he was a very strong king. He had a lot of military conquests. He was very successful, so much so that the people at that time and for a long time, they referred to the nation of Israel as the land of Omri. That is how, you know, powerful he was. People all around, you know, associated Omri with the land of Israel. But the Bible doesn't say anything about all that, you know, because in God's sight, if a man or a woman is not doing that which pleases God, is encouraging idolatrous practices, living the life that doesn't please God, in the eyes of the world, you may be the most successful individual, but in the eyes of God, you are a zero, you are a nobody. So you may be the topmost leader, successful leader, highest position in career or in wealth, but none of these things really matter to God. They are all worthless. You know? If you gain the whole world, but you lose your own soul, it is useless. And that's what these three kings really teach us. You know? One guy who did ascend to the throne, but lost it because for him, drink was everything. Another guy who was a servant, you know, decided to take that position, and he killed Elah, that is Zimri killed Elah, and then, you know, there was an opposition, there was a coup against him, and he thought everything is over, and he committed suicide, you know. Now, this is how life ends for people who think that they are the ones, they are the boss, I can handle it, but from God's perspective, they are zero. Like Omri, you know, even though if we had an interview with anybody those days, they would have said, Omri, he is a great guy, he's a fantastic guy. This is what he did. He shifted the capital, he had so many military conquests, people all around were afraid of him. He was a great king. But from God's side, nothing is mentioned about Omri. In fact, it is mentioned that he was a most evil king because he did not really follow after God. So true success in the eyes of God is measured by our faithfulness to Him. This is why, as we go through life, above everything else, our heart's desire should always be, Lord, let me be faithful and true to You till the very end. not faithful and true to friends and position and power and prestige, but faithful to the Lord. That should be our heart's desire as we grow older day by day. Now, let's look at the passage this evening. Chapter 16, verses 8 to 14 gives us the details about Elah. First of all, some selected touch points about his reign. When did he become king? Verse 8 tells us in the 26th year of Asa, king of Judah. There's the parallel that is mentioned. Okay, these are the kings in the northern kingdom and Asa, king of Judah. Asa reigned for a long time, and during this period there were different kings going on over here because there was no stability whatsoever. Which kingdom did he govern? Asa was the son of Baasha, and he became king over Israel. How long did he reign? Just 2 years. Okay, he was the son of a king, you know, so if he had done good, you know, he had a godly heritage, he had a future ahead of him, but he messed up his life because of his desire for drink. Now, verses 9 and 10 speaks about the conspiracy by Zimri to assassinate Elah. This is what we read in verse 9 and 10. And his servant Zimri, whose servant? Elah's servant, who was commander of half his chariots, conspired against him. Now he was at Tirzah. Who was at Tirzah? Elah, drinking himself drunk in the house of Arza. Arza could have been like a prime minister or a head in his cabinet, and who was over the household of Tirzah. So here we find Elah, you know, along with his friends, who is drinking himself to oblivion, and Zimri, who was a servant, but who was a commander, if you were to say, of half his chariots, or he was in charge of, you know, looking after half his chariots. He says, hey, my master is getting drunk over there. Now let me take use of that opportunity to kill this guy. If I kill this guy, then I would be king because there's nobody left. Now that is what he thought. That is what he thought. Now if you notice Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verses 16 and 17, you know, King Solomon writing with godly wisdom, you know, speaks about the behavior pattern of a king. He says, woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles and your princes feast at the proper time for strength and not for drunkenness. So this is what King Solomon, with his wisdom and experience, put it together. He says, hey, you know, if a guy is just a young king and he says power has got into his head, you know, let me enjoy life, be careful, you know. And that's what Elah did. He was the son of the king, and maybe he thought, you know, he was powerful, he can relax, nobody can touch him, and he indulged in drunkenness. Verse 10 tells us, then Zimri went in and struck him and put him to death in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, and became king in his place. And it came about that when he became king, as soon as he sat on the throne, that he killed all the household of Baasha. He did not leave a single male, neither of his relatives nor of his friends. Thus Zimri destroyed all the household of Baasha, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke against Baasha through Jehu the prophet. Now, remember, Elah's father is Baasha, and there was a prophecy against Baasha because of his behavior, what he did, through Jehu the prophet. Now, Baasha had fulfilled the prophecy of Ahijah, and Zimri fulfilled the prophecy of Jehu. Now, you cannot say, okay, how can we blame Baasha, how can we blame Zimri? As we looked at Baasha's life, we learned that important principle, isn't it? Just because a person fulfills divine prophecy, that doesn't mean that that person is innocent of sin. Both of them were murderers, you know. The Lord held them responsible and accountable. But God used them to mete out punishment and judgment. So in less than 50 years, the first two dynasties of Israel's kings had come to an end, and every member of their families had been exterminated. Okay, that is what Zimri did. Okay, and if you notice, verse 13 says, "For all the sins of Baasha and the sins of Eli his son, which they sinned and which they made Israel sin, provoking the Lord God of Israel to anger with their idols." This is a summary evaluation of Elah's life. Elah was punished for what he did, for what his father did, taking the children of Israel into idolatrous practices. Verse 14 says, "Now the rest of the acts of Elah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel?" And you remember earlier also we discussed this, if you go hunt for it, it won't be there, because that was not really important from biblical perspective. What is important from biblical perspective is they did not follow after the Lord, but they provoked the Lord to anger. Now, the name Elah means a terebinth, which was a small Mediterranean tree found in the area of Palestine. Now, just like a little tree does not carry a long history, same thing, little king, we little king, nothing much is mentioned about him, except this much, that which set him up for trouble, that which caused his death, was what we read in verse 9. He was drinking himself drunk. He was drinking himself drunk. Now, obviously, this would have been a common practice for him, to go to that place to meet with Arza, his friend, and have a good time. And Zimri would have known of his habits. So it would have been a planned situation to say, okay, when he gets drunk, this is what I am going to do. Okay. Now, while his forces are engaged in battle, remember Zimri is looking after half of the his chariots. When they are involved in battle, Elah decides to stay back with Arza, his friend, and decides to drink himself tragically to his own death. So he must have thought that this is a safe place for me, away from the warfare. But actually, it became the most dangerous place. You remember, even in David's life, when he should have been at war, when he was relaxing at home, that is where he committed adultery with Bathsheba, and that is where it led to a lot of problems as well. So when you look at Elah's life, son of a king, great opportunities ahead, but he loved strong drink. That, you would say, was a leak in his character. Some people may say, after all, it was should have just been a friendly, casual drink with his friend Arza. What is wrong about it? He was just having a good time. It is just that little things that you give space to that leads to big things. It is maybe just being idle, not doing anything, or maybe the type of company that you have, the pleasure that you seek, these are all little leaks that you may say it's okay, but over a period of time, a little leak, if it is not looked after, becomes a big hole, isn't it? A little leak in a ship can definitely sink it. So we must be careful, even this evening, as we look at the life of Elah. Great plans ahead for him, but cut short because he loved his drink, he loved his pleasure. Ask ourselves this evening, is there any leaks in our spiritual life that we have allowed to just get in? And is it becoming bigger and bigger now? And are you getting drowned? Put a stop. Stop that leak or plug that leak so that you can be on float and on fire for God. Next, we look at Zimri. Zimri. When did he become king? It was in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah. How long did he reign? He reigned only 7 days. So tragic, isn't it? Zimri thought he would be the next king. He was just a servant, aspired for a big position. And, he got that position through treacherous means, but he ruled only for 7 days, Now, we may say, why 7 days only God gave to him? Okay, couldn't God have given him some more time, so that he could have maybe made some changes in policies, changes in this nation, changes in his behavior? But the startup itself was very wrong, isn't it? Aspiring for a position, killing the guy who is in charge so that you can take over that position. And once you take over that position, the same that which was done to you is done by someone else in your own army. That is so tragic. And that's what a lot of people do today, isn't it? Instead of waiting for God's time, instead of waiting for God's plan for their lives, they want to climb up on somebody else so that they can reach to the top. But once they reach the top, they find it's not that easy. There's a lot of problems, a lot of oppositions, and sometimes they just give up also. Some people even commit suicide because the pressure was too much for them. But here it was not pressure that caused his suicide. It was because, he did the wrong thing, So, we must remember that 7 days is a brief time, yes, but it's also a responsible time. He could have done so much in 7 days, but what was he doing in those 7 days, He was actually sitting and plotting, what he is going to do next, And in that position, you find Omri, the next guy coming in and killing him. 7 days after he has killed Elah, after he has killed all of Baasha's and Elah's relatives, that would have happened in those 7 days, and he's looking for what can be done next. And God says, hey, it's time now, it's time now. I gave you 7 days, but you didn't do anything good in those 7 days. Now, we do not know how much time God has given to us. Sometimes we may think, oh, I want 70 years. Sometimes God may give you only 7 days. It's not the number of years that makes the difference. It's what you do with those years, isn't it? Some people live very, very long lives, but in God's eyes, they are zero. Some people live very short lives, but in God's eyes, they have definitely achieved great things. If you study church history and biographies, you find missionaries who died very young, and you may say, if only they had lived so many more years, things would have been so very different. But we don't know. But in those short years, they accomplished so much, and we still read about them. There are others who lived long, and we don't even bother about them. They are unknowns, because they do not do anything for God. So let's remember some important lessons from Zimri. Now, where did he reign? He reigned in Tirzah, and you find in verse 15 onwards, the people were camped against Gibeathon, which belonged to the Philistines. Now, look at this now. Zimri, who is in command of half of Elah's chariots, now he has become the king. The people have got together, and they are at Gibeathon, which belongs to the Philistines. And if you were to say, there's a war going on that side, okay? Now, the army, if you were to say, is it at Gibeathon, fighting against the Philistines. And the people who are at camp heard it and said, Zimri has conspired and has also struck down the king. Now, remember, this is happening under Elah's leadership. They are at Gibeathon, and you find Zimri, who is on the other side, he is not at war. When the people who are that side heard that Zimri has killed the king, what happened? Therefore, verse 16, all Israel made Omri, who was the commander of the army, king over Israel, that day in the camp. Okay. This is what Zimri did to Elah. So the people said, tit for tat, we will do to him. And as a result, Omri became the commander. Then Omri and all Israel went with him from Gibeathon, and they besieged Tirzah. And it came about, when Zimri saw that the city was taken, he went into the citadel of the king's house, burned the king's house over him with fire, and he died. The scenario is this. Zimri is in his house in the king, as a king. And you find the people are at war in which place? Gibbethon, Philistines. Now what comes to him that this guy has taken, done a coup over here and up, you know, overthrown the king over here and is now the king. He's in the king's house. Obviously, they do not like what Zimri did. So the entire army comes, and when Zimri hears, he is now stuck in his house. What does he do? He bolts the doors, you know. He sets the whole house on fire, and he says, it's over. Suicide, you know. Tragic end, you know. He could have done so many things differently, you know. Waited for God's time, if it was God's plan for Zimri to be king. Or even at this point of time to say, I'm sorry, you know. But no, he said, rather than die at the hands of these people, I will kill myself. And that's oftentimes the response of people, isn't it? You know. So Zimri reigned from Tirzah. The army was in Gibbethon. It was two different directions. Zimri was a military man. He was looking after half of the chariots of Elah. But he was not at the army's camp at Gibbethon. And probably the field army was pro, you know, Omri. So when they heard that, you know, this guy has killed the king, definitely they proclaim Omri as king and take over his house, you know, his area that he was there. Now, Zimri is one of the few suicides in the Bible, along with Samson and Saul and Ahithophel. Remember Ahithophel also? A counselor of David crosses over to Absalom's side, and when he finds that, you know, things are getting tough for him, he's on the wrong side, he should have been with David. Instead of coming back, instead of admitting his error, he said it's over, and he kills himself. Tragic end of a person was called as he spoke as if it was the oracles of God. That's what the scripture says. He was so close to God, he could hear and identify for David what God wanted him to do. But because, again, of deep-rooted bitterness in his life, it led him astray. So suicide, if you notice, you know, is always the ultimate action of cowardice. It is the last resort of the man who cannot or dare not stand up, you know, to life itself. Now, if you notice, you know, once Omni took over, you find, you know, there was a political limbo, as it were, for 4 years, you know, because some people were devoted to Omri and some to Tibni, son of Ginath. That's what we read in verse 21. But Tibni was not the king, but, you know, he did not have full say, or he did not have full power. The people were divided in their support. And verse 22 says, so Tibni died, and then Omri became king. Okay. In other words, till, you know, Tibni died, you know, Omri did not really have full power as a king. It is only after Tibni's death that he was coronated as king. Now, Zimri is said as a servant and commander, you know, but when he had the secret desire to become king, he conspires against his superior. He was a disloyal servant who wanted more than what he was given. Important principle. Be content with what you have, isn't it? The scripture tells us so very plainly, godliness with contentment is great gain. And the scripture also says, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Love of money, love of pleasure, love of, you know, position, all these things, you know, when you desire more than what you have been given to you, instead of being content with what you have, you say, I want something more. By hook or by crook, I want to get it. Then it is dangerous. You are on the downhill. But what is also something interesting about Zimri, you know, even though he reigned for such a short time, he is referred to in the book of 2 Kings by Queen Jezebel. In 2 Kings chapter 9 and verse 31, we read, you know, when Jehu comes to carry out the Lord's commands to destroy the household of Ahab, she says, is it peace, Zimri, murderer of your master. That is how she refers to Jehu, okay? Because Jehu was the one who brought the message. But she remembers Zimri, you know, because Zimri went down in history, if you were to say, as a traitor, you know, who destroyed, you know, who not only slaughtered Elah, but destroyed his whole household so that his kingship would be solidified. You know. So he was a traitorous, betraying servant who murdered his superior. And that's what he was remembered for. Couple of years later, Jezebel remembers Zimri for being a murderer and a traitor. 1 week, just 7 days, Zimri spent his time, focus and thoughts and energy and conspiracy to just think about murdering Elah and all his family. What did he get in return? 7 days he got on the throne and then a violent death in a burning fire. You know, was it really worth it to aspire for all that? Not at all. We were created by God to be His servants, but we become traitors when we spend all our time and energy to sin and to turn our backs to God and follow the pleasures of this world. We also, like Zimri, have murdered to take part in the lusts of this world. Jesus had to die for our sins, and every time we sin, we have no gratitude for His sacrifice. We, like Zimri, want something more. We don't want to be just the servant. We want to be the boss. We want to have the world. We want to reign, but it leads us only to death. As Matthew 16:26 would say, "For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul?" Yet another important lesson from Zimri is that he achieved what he wanted, but it did not last. He achieved what he wanted, but it did not last. The pleasure of being a king was very, very brief. And similar is the case of sin, isn't it? When we sin, we may feel pleasure for a moment, but it does not last. Zimri traded his soul for 7 days on the throne. Ask ourselves this evening, what are we trading eternity for what we are doing now? Are we enjoying pleasure and position and missing out for all eternity? Now, Zimri's life also teaches us of the brevity of life. Just 7 days he was on the throne, okay? The Bible tells us the Lord will come back as a thief in the night. We do not know when He would come back. He will come back unannounced. You know, it could be tonight, it could be tomorrow, it could be 10 years, 100 years from now. But the issue is, you know, anytime it can happen. Anytime it can happen. And we have to be ready at all times. Also, when you're looking at Zimri's life, we learn this important lesson. Don't take advantage of the weaknesses of others. Now, if you notice, Zimri knew that Elah was a drunkard, you know, and he knew that through this drunkenness, you know, he could capture the king. That was, if you were to say, his weak spot. Maybe other areas he would have been strong. He would have watched, observed his master, and he would have found out this weak spot, and then he latched on to that. Let's remember that we don't take advantage of the weakness of others to climb over them. You know, be careful. Your successes could be just very short-lived. Thirdly, let's look at Omri. You find this in chapter 16, verses 23 to 28. When did he become king? In the 31st year of Asa, king of Judah, he became king over Israel, and he reigned 12 years. 6 years at Tirzah, then he shifted his capital to Samaria, and he lived and reigned over there for the next 6 years. Now, the hill of Samaria was named after its owner, Shemer, which was located 7 miles northwest of Shechem, and it stood 300 feet high. So, since it was on a mountain top, it stood by itself. So if attackers had to charge, you know, they had to climb uphill to get to that position. And as a result, now it was more safer, it was more central, and then it gave another people of Israel easy access. So Samaria then became the icon of political success, all because of Omri. Okay, but what does the summary tell us about him? Verse 25 and 26, he doesn't say he shifted his capital, Samaria became the capital, so he did great. No, what does it say in verse 25? It says, and Omri did evil in the sight of the Lord, and acted more wickedly than all who were before him. For he walked in the way of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, and in his sins which he had made Israel sin, provoking the Lord God of Israel with their idols. This is God's summary of his life. Okay, remember Jesus spoke about the rich fool. Okay, he was a successful guy, he had plenty, and that year he had even more, and he's sitting and dreaming, this is what I will do. But how does God address him? He calls him a fool. Why? Because God was nowhere in his thinking whatsoever. And this is the tragedy. In the eyes of the world, very successful, top guy, top leader, but not depending on God. God, the one true God, is not in charge of your life. God's evaluation is what really matters, isn't it? At the end of your life, it is not what how people have evaluated you that will get you entrance into God's kingdom. How God has evaluated you, that is what is most important. So that is why, as much as we live in a world full of pressure with what people are making us do, asking us do, making us say, don't say this, what will people say? That's the attitude that a child grows up with, We must be careful that we don't live for people. We live for God and God alone. Now, extra-biblical sources or Assyrian records refer to Israel as the land of Omri. Now, his influence extended far. He defeated the Moabites, the record of which is there on what is called as the famous Moabite stone. We have that stone as an archaeological discovery. He also made a treaty with Ethbaal, who was the king of Tyre and Sidon, that involved the marriage of his son Ahab and Ethbaal's daughter Jezebel. Hey, look at the connections over here now. Omri, gives his son in marriage, his son was Ahab. He gives his son in marriage to Ethbaal's daughter, who was Jezebel. Okay? Now, what happened next, isn't it? Things became worse in Ahab's time. Jeroboam's cult of setting up idols now is progressing even more and more and more, and by the time we get into Ahab and Jezebel, it really gets really, really bad. Okay, so even though these things are mentioned not in the scriptures but in Assyrian records, we do find maybe historically they may have said, hey, Omri was a great guy. He established peace, he established treaty by signing this, by giving his son, because that's how they did it. But to whom did he give his son? To Ethbaal, daughter was Jezebel, who really messed up that whole kingdom later on. So despite Omri's forward-looking vision for what he wanted to do for Israel, despite his many accomplishments, whether it's military or his capital, he perpetuated the sins of Jeroboam, and his ties especially with Phoenicia, the king of Tyre, began to release upon Israel a lot of pagan religious practices, and as a result, Omri's life, was definitely not great, condemned by God. Verse 27 says, now the rest of the acts of Omri which he did and his might which he showed, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Omri slept with his fathers and he was buried in Samaria, and Ahab his son became king in his place. Couple of lessons to be learned this evening from these three kings. Number one, God's judgment falls in his own time. Both Baasha and Jeroboam were warned and they were given a chance to turn, but they both went to the grave without giving up on their sins. Their sons only reigned for 2 years before receiving the judgment God had promised. In fact, Zimri only reigned for 7 days before being judged by God. You know, how should this truth affect us today? Judgment of God falls in his own time, you know, but the judgment of God is always true. In other words, it will fall, okay, not today, not tomorrow, you know, but it will fall, you know. Now, we might be tempted to look at some of these cases and say, why did this guy get so many years, you know, and why did this guy get so less years? Why did God judge some kings more severely than others? Why did God allow Zimri to rule only 7 days while Baasha reigned for 24 years? You know, why was the most wicked king of Israel the one who had a dynasty? Okay, when you think of Ahab, okay. But in the end, we must remember that God is God. His way is always right. And we must be careful that we don't fall into the trap of judging fairness according to our standards here. One day, God will definitely make all things right. And that day has not yet come, that day is coming soon. So judgment is sure, judgment is in his own time, and judgment is definitely fair. Third important principle, the grass is not necessarily greener on the other side. Okay, whether it came to Zimri, whether it came to Omri, you know, coming to power, thinking that, hey, if I get to this position, life will be great for me. No, it is not great. Green pastures are found when the Lord leads us, isn't it? The Lord is my shepherd, he leads me by green pastures. It is only when God leads us that we have the green pastures. Now, if you're looking over onto the other side and you think those pastures are green, you may land up there and you find that is not green. Okay, so grass is not necessarily greener on the other side. It is green only when we are in the perfect will of God. So don't look at others, their successes and their wealth and all that they have and say, hey, if only I had that, that would be great. No. Be faithful to what God has called you to do. Be faithful in your relationship with Him. Be content with what God has given you. That is what green pastures is all about. Fourthly, just because we accomplish God's purpose once doesn't mean that we will continue down that path. Okay. Now, if you notice, God used Baasha, God used Elah, God in a way also used, you know, Omri, you know, to bring about judgment. You know, he used him to fulfill God's purpose. But that doesn't mean that they did the right all the time, isn't it? They did the wrong, and in spite of the wrong, God's purpose was accomplished. Okay. God did give them opportunities to do the right thing, but they did not do it. You know. So just because, you know, maybe when you look back into your life, you may say, oh, I did this and God was well pleased with that, so now I can do whatever I want to. No. You know, fulfilling God's purpose is an ongoing daily obedience that is important. We cannot, you know, depend on our obedience, you know, years ago as faithfulness. Faithfulness is how we are living today. Finally, the most important thing was the fifth lesson, invest well in our families. Invest well in our families. We notice all these kings who have been here. It was all because of that first line, Jeroboam, his family life, and obviously he has been allowing his family to worship other gods, has been passed down, you know. And then you find, and sooner, the next time we are here together, we will learn about Omri's son Ahab, who continued in that behavior, you know. It is important, you know, train up a child in the way that he should go, so that when he's old, he won't depart from it. Foundations are important. Okay? If there's no foundation that is laid, later on if the building is tottering, we can't say, hey, please do something about it. It is the foundations that are so very important. So let's learn to invest in our families wisely, training them to do the right thing. Let our heart's desire constantly be that they are close to God. Not to say that they should be number one in this world. It's tragic today from the parental situation with the high pressure of studies and coming up in life. Oftentimes the pressure that is put is at the cost of the child's relationship with God. Don't come to church, you have your classes. Don't come to church because you have something else to be done which is important. No. Invest rightly, right from the very beginning, to say, hey, your relationship with God is the most important thing. Time with the Lord, time that you spend in fellowship is the most important thing. And once that is done, later on in life, when they finish their studies, when they go somewhere else, when they go to a new city or a new country, the first thing that they will do is to find a church, find fellowship. But if the foundation is not laid, then what will they do? They'll say, oh, I didn't find fellowship, I didn't find a church. They live their own life, cut off totally from the Lord. Tragic, the things that are happening in today's families. Why? Investment was not done in the initial years. So let's learn from these kings. Tragic, some guys lived for 2 years, some for a week they reigned, but their life ended tragically. Let's make sure our investment is wise, so that the returns for that investment is not only in this life, but also, as people often say, the returns of our investment in the kingdom is out of this world. Let's bow our heads in prayer together.